From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. The results are in from yesterday's primary elections. Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker will once again face Republican Darren Bailey. Meanwhile, in the race to succeed Senator Dick Durbin, Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton won a 10-way primary. She actually got 40% of the vote and will face former Republican Party Chair Don Tracy. Joining me now to talk about that and more is Dan Petrella, political writer at the Chicago Tribune. Dan, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Hey, Brian. Good to be here. Hope you got enough sleep last night.
Yeah, you know what? We didn't do live coverage, so I got plenty of sleep last night. I hope you got enough sleep last night, and I hope our listeners got enough sleep. They can join us at 800-222-9455. We're going to spend the first half of today's program on this. If you have questions about the election and its outcomes or thoughts on any results that might have surprised you, we'd love to hear about it. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. All right, Dan, let's start with the primary for U.S. Senate on the Democratic side. There were three frontrunners out of that field of 10 candidates, Lieutenant Governor Stratton and Representatives Raja Krishnamoorthy and Robin Kelly. Now, Krishnamoorthy had this big lead in funding throughout this race and had ads out a lot earlier than the other candidates, and yet Stratton beat him by a solid margin. What happened?
Yeah, not only that, he had a lot of outside support coming from some independent political action committees at the end, attacking Stratton, boosting him, and also trying to boost Kelly to sort of, in an attempt to siphon away some supporters from Stratton and improve Krishnamoorthy's chances. But the lieutenant governor won a surprisingly decisive victory. The race was called by the Associated Press before 10 o'clock last night, and, about half of her overall vote came from Cook County, but she won counties from, the Wisconsin border all the way down to the Kentucky border. I think Krishnamoorthy actually ended up winning more counties, but obviously a much smaller percentage of the vote. So, her campaign, I think, was even a little bit surprised by how wide the victory was. And I think it is a testament to the support and popularity of her two-time running mate Governor Pritzker, and also the way she really embraced some progressive campaign themes, her position on abolishing the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, her call for $25 an hour federal minimum wage, and the fact that she's built goodwill with Democratic voters all across the state in two terms as the number two elected official in Illinois.
Although I got to say, in my view, this is somebody who's in journalism. I don't feel like I saw a lot of her as lieutenant governor until this campaign. I mean, she didn't have as prominent a role in the administration as, say Vice President Vance does in the Trump administration. But you mentioned Pritzker. We got a text message about this. Amy in Wakanda said, I'm not surprised that the candidate with the governor's support won for the Senate seat. I did in-depth research of who I wanted for Senate, but I wonder if many people took that time. The governor's support's a quick way to say, this person's good and qualified. She said, maybe people did what she did and genuinely liked Stratton's policies best. What do you think about what this says about Governor Pritzker and his, his endorsement and his money, which was a factor here, even though there are federal campaign donation limits that are quite severe?
Yes. And the way around that was, he and his wife, I believe, and even his children, who I don't believe had ever given to political campaigns before, maxed out what they were allowed to do on the what's called the hard money side directly to her Juliana for Illinois Senate campaign fund. But then the governor and some of his relatives funneled money into a super PAC run by his former deputy campaign manager, who also ran the unsuccessful state constitutional amendment referendum campaign in 2020 to do the graduated income tax. So lots of close ties to the governor's political organization in backing Stratton in this race. It's interesting to see the two of them together at an official state event one day where the governor is giving his full-throated endorsement for his partner in governance, as they like to say, and then cutting a commercial for a ostensibly independent political action committee the next day, also also backing her. So, you know, that had a lot to do with it. But as you said, Congressman Krishnamoorthy vastly outraised and outspent them, as did folks who were supporting him, folks in the cryptocurrency industry, some of his supporters in the Indian American community. But in the end, you know, Stratton won by a pretty healthy, about 7-point margin. So, you know, I think there is something to be said for those endorsements. It's, you know, maybe they carry more weight in a primary race, when you have a figure like Pritzker, who's fairly popular among the party. Also worth noting that she had the endorsement of Senator Tammy Duckworth, who would be her partner in the Senate. So lots of institutional support there. But Congressman Krishnamoorthy also had lots of endorsement from other elected officials and county chairs, as did Robin Kelly, who came in third place with about 18% of the vote, who had the support of the Congressional Black Caucus. So
Yeah,
it
who
was
are
really.
pretty upset with Pritzker. You know, I also noticed she had that ad, and we can't say it on the radio, but bleep Trump. She didn't say it herself, as she points out in the ad, but she has a bunch of other people saying it. You know, I wonder if that sort of ethos, right? We always hear this idea now that Democrats just want their elected officials to do something, right? Fight back, do something about Trump. If, you know, she's trying to connect with that sort of attitude out there.
Yeah, and that certainly has been a theme of the campaign. I think it was interesting to note in that commercial that neither she nor the governor said it, but Senator Duckworth did. So, yeah, I think that's part of it as well. A big theme for her campaign was going to Washington to be a fighter for Democratic values. It'll be interesting to see, assuming she wins the November election, which I would think, just given the political demographics of Illinois these days, is the likely outcome. But you know, we won't know until the votes are tallied in November. But you know, how she's able to put that into practice in the United States Senate, that could very well still be controlled by Republicans, where you know, you need filibuster proof supermajorities to get things passed. So it'll be interesting to see what that looks like in practice if she does indeed become our next US Senator from Illinois.
Although who knows, maybe the filibuster will be going away before the Democrats even get there. On the Republican side, speaking of that, and you mentioned Republicans don't do well in Illinois anymore. Basically, since Trump came on the national scene, no Republican. I would say the average has been what, 13, 15 points down statewide. Don Tracy has the task of trying to overcome that. Former chair of the Republican Party, he was the front runner throughout the campaign and won by double digits over his next closest opponent, who is Jeanne Evans. What do you take from the field of Republican candidates in that race?
You know, I think it's just evidence of how hard it is for Republicans to win in Illinois these days, particularly in these statewide races. You know, they often point to the gerrymandering of state legislative maps and congressional maps, but when you look at statewide races, as you said, you know, double-digit margins in these statewide races has pretty much become the norm. I'm interested to see what tack that Tracy takes in the general election. You know, he was not able to figure out, as state party chair, how to improve this party's you know, outcome in some of these races. It'll be interesting to see in his campaign personally if he can you know, narrow that gap. You know, the current Illinois Republican Party chair is the person who lost the last Senate race for Republicans by double-digit margins. So it's gonna be really interesting to see, you know, how he attempts to sort of thread the needle on Trump, particularly with voters in the suburbs of Chicago, where the president remains pretty unpopular and where much of the vote in Illinois comes from.
You say it's going to be pretty interesting, but we'll see about that. I'm not convinced that that's going to be a very exciting race. Time will tell. Let's move on to the Republican primary for governor, because Governor Pritzker was unopposed. No one even bothered to sort of put up token opposition to him this time. Ted Dabrowski, formerly of Wire Points and the Policy Institute, a conservative think tank, won a few Chicago area counties, but you know, not enough to put him over the top. November will officially be a rematch between Darren Bailey and J.B. Pritzker. Dabrowski seemed to have some things going for him, right? Fundraising, support from elected officials, some big money people. What does it say that Bailey won with a majority of the primary vote this time?
I think that it is an indication of name recognition and the popularity that he retains among base Republican Party voters in Illinois. he attempted to appeal to voters. Bailey did in the Chicago area and the Chicago suburbs by choosing a running mate from suburban Cook County, which he had a running mate from the suburbs last time as well, which seems to be an overlooked fact. But Aaron Del Mar is a better known figure, somebody who's considering his own potential run for governor before he decided to join up with Bailey. I think again, this is a race where we're going to see whether Republicans are able to find any new approach where they can narrow some of these margins in these races. Bailey lost by 13 percentage points last time around. He's tried to portray this sort of kinder, gentler version of himself, walking back comments like calling the city of Chicago, which is the state's economic engine, a crime-ridden hellhole. So it's going to be interesting to see if he can sort of stick to that new script of being more open and listening and sticking to sort of economic message he says he wants to address in this campaign.
Well, and even if he sticks to that script, I've already gotten multiple press releases from the governor's campaign arm, which had been really quiet for the most part in the past few months. And then suddenly last night, it's alive. And as of this morning, they're already putting out videos showcasing all the many things Darren Bailey has said in the past that presumably will not go over well with Democratic voters.
Yes, and I think that they are going to be trying very hard over the next several months to not let folks forget some of Bailey's previous positions, some of his very conservative stances on a whole variety of issues. And I think what's going to be interesting to see in that race is just how much money the governor's campaign operation feels like it needs to spend this year, whether they are going to try to save a little bit for potential future campaign endeavors, or whether we're going to see figures north of $100 million again and spent on a governor's race here in Illinois.
All right, a couple of messages we got from listeners I want to share now. Let's see. Lloyd in Danville says the outcome of the primaries are a reflection of where we are. Money in politics is not good. Robin Kelly's performance, this is a congresswoman, her district goes from the south side of Chicago all the way down to include Danville. He says Robin Kelly's performance reflects her work and messaging. Her future is in question. The general election will continue to be fueled by the state of national politics and issues. Candidates must now rely on their base and take their message to the communities they represent. People are hurting. The Democratic way is at stake, and the president is on the verge of destabilizing the world order, Lloyd says. We heard from Lisa in Bloomington, who said, I was a little surprised and disappointed that Juliana Stratton won. In my opinion, she's the least qualified with zero congressional experience. She was chosen by the governor, who I like a lot, but didn't like that move. His money and power won makes me feel insignificant as an informed voter. We must get big money out of politics, Lisa says. But Christopher in Brinfield says the results did not surprise him. Now it's time for the Democrats to get together and vote blue up and down the ballot. We want to hear from you, 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. We're talking about the results of yesterday's primary elections with Dan Petrella, political writer at the Chicago Tribune. Just a few minutes until we need to take a break, Dan. Let's turn to some of the congressional races. And one of the big narratives that I see developing here is this idea of an AIPAC lens, right? American Israel Public Affairs Council, I think that stands for. But basically a pro-Israel group here that has in the past had significant effect on our elections, spends a lot of money. But when an idea like that begins to take hold, I wonder if there's some groupthink going on, and maybe the story is getting a little overblown. How are you thinking about the significance of AIPAC in this, many different campaigns in Illinois?
Well, it was really a sort of split decision, I guess, when you look at these Chicago area congressional races where they were involved. Donna Miller, a Cook County commissioner, who was running for the seat Robin Kelly is giving up, gave up to ran for the Senate seat. Had some support from some of these AIPAC-aligned groups, these groups funded by AIPAC donors, and she won by a pretty healthy margin, including over Robert Peters, who's a state senator from the South Side of Chicago, and Jesse Jackson Jr., who held the seat previously before he went to federal prison for misusing campaign funds. Jackson did not get the Victory handed him, out of name recognition or possibly sympathy from the recent death of his father, the civil rights icon, Reverend Jesse Jackson. So it's hard to say whether, AIPAC money was the deciding factor there, but then you turn to
Well, and that's the
the.
thing. And let me put a pause because we need to take a break before we turn to another race. But yeah, I know people are saying, look, AIPAC maybe won that for the for Donna Miller, but Jesse Jackson was, I mean, he was like really corrupt, right? There were like guitars supposedly signed by Michael Jackson, although I think maybe that was maybe later proved to be a fake or something, but fur coats and things like that. I don't know.
No,
Maybe the
I believe.
voters have a long memory on some of these things. We will talk more about this after a short break here. My guest is Dan Petrella, political writer at the Chicago Tribune. We want to hear from you about the primary. Randy, rural Peoria County, sent us a text. I'm nervous about our Senate candidate. Once again, the people in the rural areas that want to vote Dem will be completely ignored and shoved further into the GOP, a bad trend overall. She's no Jesse Jackson, Randy says. 800-222-9455. We will continue going through the primary election results here on the 21st show. Stay with us. It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the results of yesterday's primary election. Juliana Stratton is going to be the Democratic nominee for U.S. Senate for the seat being given up by Senator Dick Durbin. She'll face former Republican Party Chair Don Tracy. Governor Pritzker wasn't even opposed, so he is obviously the nominee for the Democrats, running against Darren Bailey, a rematch of 2022 in that race. And my guest for this conversation, we've been moving on to the congressional races now, is Dan Petrella, political writer at the Chicago Tribune. 800-222-9455 to join us. Dan, let's move to the 9th congressional district, which was getting national attention. There were six candidates who got, more than 5% of the vote, but it really seemed to be a race between three. You had Daniel Biss, who is a former state legislator and a mayor in Evanston. Kat Abagazale, who is a, actually, what would you say, like an influencer, I guess, a sort of progressive social media person is what she's best known for. And Laura Fine, another state legislator. This was yet another race in which people were talking about AIPAC. What do you make of what happened there?
Yeah, and again, this is sort of what shows the other side of the argument, where they sort of had a split decision. The folks who were aligned with AIPAC, they put a lot of money behind Laura Fine, who ended up finishing in third place in the race. Biss ended up winning by about 3% of the vote, 3 percentage points. It was interesting to see Kat Abagazale, who is, yeah, like you said, a social media political commentator, get about a quarter of the vote, come in second place. Despite having I guess fair to say shallow roots in the district,
She
and
was from out of
took a lot
state,
of
right? We don't have to
yes,
put
yeah,
it. It was a
she recently moved to the area. There's a lot of questions about how much support she would actually get at the ballot box in the district, because a lot of her audience is all across the country. So but I think her presence and her presence not only on social media but then on cable news and things like that brought a lot of attention to the race. But Biss had a lot of institutional support and had the backing from Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, who's held the seat since 1999, is sort of passing the torch here to Biss. It'll be interesting to see if Biss holds on to this seat for another few decades, because the person who had it before Schakowsky had it for about half a century, I believe, going back to like the 1940s, I think, save one term. So it'll be interesting to see if Biss holds this seat now for decades, or if it becomes a every 2 year kind of primary fight situation for him.
It is interesting. So, okay, AIPAC, we can talk more about that here. I know we have a caller who wants to talk about that. We'll get to that in a moment. I also wonder, I personally saw this race as a test of like influencer power in elections, right? You have this energy in the Democratic Party that wants new people. There's, you hear, at least if you go on social media, like Blue Sky, you know, like we need younger people, that sort of thing. And here comes Biss, who's been in politics for a couple of decades now. I think I'm accurate there, at least a decade and a half, versus this person who, you know, as you said, came from out of state, does not have any background in elected office. We had a woman who called in, didn't stay on the line, but she said she's disappointed with Democrats because it seems like everyone was asking for major change, but everyone just ended up falling in line. Do you think, am I sort of overlooking things that or focusing on things that maybe voters weren't paying as much attention to? How do you see this influencer question here?
No, I think that's very fair. I think that's a very fair read. And I think that's part of the reason that you did see, you know, you did see Kat do so well. She got, you know, almost 32,000 votes, finished in second place ahead of three sitting state lawmakers. So, you know, obviously that audience did garner her a lot of attention and support in the race. I think it's also when there were in the teens of candidates. I don't want to try and count here while we're on there and I've lost track of the number. But, you know, and also I think there's some arguing that the progressive vote, I think Biss is fair to say is a fairly progressive, fairly progressive figure. But, you know, you also had State Senator Mike Simmons, who's a progressive, and State Representative Han Nguyen, who's progressive, and Bushra Amawala, who's a school board member in suburban Skokie, all kind of sort of running in that same lane and question about whether they, you know, divided up that vote that maybe is a little bit further to the left of the political spectrum. So lots of interesting dynamics in a very crowded race. I think one of the sort of confounding things to me in a lot of these races, even going all up the ballot to the Senate race, is just the huge number of candidates in so many of these races and folks who are making their first foray into politics, and in some cases with a run for Congress or even a run for the United States Senate, which I think, the power of social media these days maybe makes people think that that's more possible. But I think it also shows that having, folks on the ground, having some organizational support behind you still can matter in a lot of these races.
Maybe starting off, as I suggested to some of those many Senate candidates, like, why not run for school board? Why not run for state legislature? Build some name recognition instead of just trying to go right to the top. Whatever. That's their
choice.
Part
of the reason there are petition signature requirements for state legislative seats sometimes are higher than for congressional seats.
Okay, fair. So it's a lower barrier of entry. Okay, yes. That's an interesting point.
Easier to get on the ballot in some instances.
Yeah, all right, let's get a couple calls. And Ralph is calling from Woodridge on line two. Ralph, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it. I think it's unfortunate that AIPAC is giving so much money to various candidates and influencing them. It just seems kind of un-American to me that a foreign country, an Israel lobby group is trying to influence so many candidates. One of the things I wonder about, and maybe your guest can comment on this, is what is expected of people that receive a lot of money from AIPAC or, you know, any other Israeli organization? Is there a loyalty oath? Is it just, well, you know, we want your support? Or is there actually something additional that is expected of these candidates? Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Ralph. Dan, what do you think? I mean, we've covered a lot of politicians getting a lot of money from various different causes over the years.
Yeah, I think, you know, the idea with AIPAC is their sort of litmus test is a pretty loyal hardline support for the state of Israel, which I think has become more troublesome for a lot of Democrats as this war in Gaza has been waged in the wake of the October 7th attacks. So, you see a lot of Democrats who maybe in the past supported AIPAC distance themselves a little more. I think of Governor Pritzker in particular, who, you know, obviously is Jewish and has been a past supporter of AIPAC, but in this race, even as questions have arisen, has distanced himself a bit. It's interesting that AIPAC was not really a factor that came up much in the Senate race, given the fact that Stratton's fundraising committee chair was Lee Rosenberg, who's a former president of AIPAC, and I believe a current board member, also Governor Pritzker's former private sector chief of staff. But AIPAC had given money to all three of the top candidates in that race over the years. So, I think this is going to be an issue to watch whether it has an influence as much in general election campaigns compared with how it didn't factor into some of these Democratic primaries is going to be something to see. But I think that is a big question. What is the mainline Democratic Party position on Israel these days, on the idea of a two-state solution to the Israel-Palestine issue? A whole host of very thorny things that folks running for these offices have to contend with.
Yeah, we've been seeing I think a real realignment on that issue, and it remains to be seen how it ultimately plays out in elected office. I think one more caller here, then we're almost out of time. Nancy from Northern Illinois. Nancy, thanks for calling in.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I agree with the previous caller, Ralph. It's truly un-American, these IPEC. This is not right. IPEC, I'm totally against that. But with that being said, I was able to meet when I filed my petition papers for state rep, District 90, down in Springfield. I met with Rick Heidner, the candidate who Republican, and I am Republican, and I met with Heidner down there when he was turning in his petition papers. And Rick Heidner deserved to have gotten it. I believe that Rick Heidner would have made the most fantastic governor we could have had in the state of Illinois. Because there were four candidates, as you know, in the Republican primary. I've been doing this for 18 years. I just really am upset about it. I'm really upset that Heidner didn't get in.
All right, Nancy, thanks for sharing your perspective. Dan, briefly remind us, who is Rick Heidner?
Yes, Rick Heidner is a real estate and video gambling magnate who's made a lot of money with the legalization of video gambling terminals at bars and restaurants and other places around the state. Sort of a fascinating figure. Somebody who has contributed to the campaigns of both Republicans and Democrats over the years. I think he raised a lot of eyebrows among political observers when he entered the race. It's sort of an unexpected development. But this is an instance where he got in, and then we didn't see a real robust, at least very highly visible campaign operation. So I think
He didn't
also
even have a
hard.
website until a couple of months ago, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and hard to overcome questions, when he's contributed to a lot of Chicago Democrats, including Mayor Brandon Johnson, who is not a popular figure among Illinois Republicans, to say the least. So I think, yeah, he had some high hurdles to try to clear in that
Huh.
Republican primary race.
Interesting. Well, Dan, thanks so much for sharing your reporting and expertise with us here on the 21st show. Very much appreciate it.
Glad to do it. Thanks, Brandon.